Spiritual and dead organism are its extremes. Doubters of my point, view, and bad nature observers may here be reminded of the law of exception from the rule, and as regards man, of the fact that neither hygienically or aesthetically have we any imagination left of the ideal beauty and health of man living under perfectly natural conditions. If the pleasure in the beautiful is a sentence in the favorable sense, then the displeasure felt by an aesthetic eye in looking upon the disharmony of shape and color must include, to a certain degree, the recognition of the pathologic. Let us return to our subject. We know that medical science is powerless as regards baldness, and that cosmetics and chemistry of tonics have failed to produce even a single new hair. I have already called the hair, especially of the human head, the odor organs of the body, which are to conduct away the exhalations of the human body. Everybody knows that sweat is produced first of all on the head and in the armpits, and that with this sweat, especially on sick people, is connected a disagreeable odor. Dr. Jaeger calls disease somewhere stench. This, with exceptions, of course, seems to me correct insofar as I am able to pronounce on the basis of many years' observation and experiments the following fundamental uniform conception of disease. Disease is a fermentation and decay process of body substance or of surplus and unnatural food material which in course of time has accumulated, especially in the digestive organs, and which makes its appearance in the shape of mucus excretion. That is, it means in the last instance nothing but the chemical decomposition, the decay of cellular albumin. As is well known, this process is accompanied by stench, while nature combines the originating of new life with fragrance, the building of the plants. Properly, man in perfect health should exhale fragrance, particularly so with his hair. Poets are rightfully comparing man with a flower, and speak of the hair fragrance of woman. I therefore recognize in the hair of the human a very important organ, which aside from protective and warmth-regulating purposes, has a highly interesting and useful destination. To conduct away the exhalations, the odor of healthy and sick people, which reveals to experts and acute noses, not only individual qualities, but even certain disclosures as regards the inner state of health or sickness of a man. If the doctors have not by far recognized digestive disturbances with the microscopes and test glasses, there have been certain quacks who have been able to state by simple hair diagnosis the stench-producing inner process of decay, the disease. Why, there are numberless people today still youthful and radiating health with a breath like that of a sewer, and who are wondering why their hair is falling out. I have now arrived at the vital spot of my researches and observations. First, one more word about the getting gray of the hair. It has been found that in hair which has become gray, the contents of air is increasing, and I am also of the opinion that this air consists probably of stinking gases, or at least is mixed with such. I recommend to a chemist with a strong scent to discover here the sulfurous acid, then the disappearance of the color of the hair will also have been explained, as it is a well-known fact that the sulfuric dioxide bleaches organic substances. It now seems to me certain, not only theoretically, but also on the basis of my interesting experiments on my own body, that the principal cause of baldness can only be an internal one. If through these odor tubes, or so to speak, gas chimneys of the head, there must be constantly discharged stinking, corroding gases, very probably impregnated with sulfur dioxide, instead of natural fragrant odors. We must not be surprised if the hair, together with its roots, becomes deathly pale, dies off, and falls out. Herewith, I claim to have recognized the reason for baldness, and to have shown the true way for its cure. I add that about 10 years ago, when I was afflicted with chronic inflammation of the kidneys, combined with a high degree of nervosity, my hair had become very gray and fell out. After having been cured from this serious disease by a dietetic treatment, I saw that at the same time the gray hairs disappeared and that my hair grew into perfect profusion. If, therefore, the main cause of baldness lies in the disturbance of digestion and interchange of matter, it can certainly be cured by regulation of these functions. It can be said that even the absolutely bald heads may again take hope. On the basis of my discovery, after all, the tonics have failed and must fail. The reason is that the cause is not external and therefore cannot be got at externally. Whoever sees his hair falling out or whoever is already bald and wishes to regenerate in this direction may apply to me for advice. There is no general internal remedy, and whoever has understood me will appreciate that individualization is necessary in every case. On the basis of the influence of my doctrine of diet on digestion and creation of clean, pure blood, supplying the correct nourishment of the hair bed, I can at least guarantee a standstill of the falling out of hair if my advice is followed correctly. Thus, all symptoms of aging are latent disease, accumulation of mucus and clogging up by mucus. Everybody subjecting himself to a thorough restoring cure in case of any disease by parting with the dead cells through mucusless diet and eventually fasting rejuvenates himself simultaneously, and whoever submits to a rejuvenating cure deprives each and every disease of its foundation. Nobody wants to believe in this possibility. Yet in each scientific dictionary, you will find the theory that at the worst one should die only of disturbance in the exchange of matter, i.e. constipation by mucus, so that life ought to end without any disease whatsoever. This would be the normal, but alas, the exception. The disease has become the rule today. If anybody would live from childhood on absolutely mucusless food and feed on nothing but fruit, it would be just as certain that he could grow neither old nor sick. I have seen persons who, through a mucusless cure, have rejuvenated and become beautiful to such an extent that they could not be recognized. Since thousands of years, humanity dreams, imagines, and paints the fountain of youth, and looks for it sentimentally to the stars in the suggestion. Think of the amounts being expended for remedies for masculine weakness and impotence, for sterility, of course all in vain, and how easy it would be to help some people, especially through correct and nourishing food from the sun kitchen. We cannot imagine with what beauty and faculties the paradoxical godlike man was gifted, what wonderful, strong, clear voice he had. The beautification and strengthening of the voice, yes, the winning back of the lost voice, is an amazing symptom in my cure, and especially eloquent proof for the really grandiose effect of my system for the entire organism of the patient. I wish to refer here especially to the wonderful success of the cure submitted to me by the Royal Bavarian Chamber Singer Heinrich Note, Munich, under my directions, whose voice had improved to the amazement of the entire musical world. Chapter 5. Increasing Longevity. In the previous chapters, I have quoted the clogging up by mucus as being the reason for disease and aging. I have also proved the possibility of resubstitution of dead cells. In view of the latter fact, it cannot be denied that the entire standstill of the human motor can be delayed for a long, long time if the body is being built up and maintained by living sun food from childhood on. At any rate, the body thus nourished is far ahead of that of the wrong food and all-eater, in that its building material is much more durable. In the right way of living, the exchange of matter takes place to a much lesser degree. Likewise, the stress on the inner organs, especially the heart and the stomach. In the performance of greatest efforts, the mucusless organism has not nearly the pulse frequency of a much eater. Merely through this saving of energy, it is possible to mathematically figure out and prove an advantage as regards longevity. But we can perhaps even solve, by this all-explaining mucoconstipation, the last of the mysteries, death. In life-endangering injuries and afflictions, the brain and the heart are the organs whose disturbance of function finally ends with death. We can say that in most diseases, death takes place through additional development of heart illness. As regards this, science has not by far spoken its last word. But we can say that the clogging up of the blood vessels of the heart and the destruction of the tender heart nerves through permanent repoisoning of the blood is the final cause of death in all chronic diseases. Likewise, the clogging up of the tender blood vessels in the brain and eventual bursting of same, apoplexy, as well as any other entire clogging up of vessels to a standstill of all functions of life produces death. Of course, other circumstances also play a part in it. For instance, insufficient supply of air in case of disease of the lungs. Science also mentions the excessive appearance of the white blood corpuscles as the reason for death. This process of disease is regarded as a disease in itself and called leukemia, white-bloodedness, but more proper in my opinion, more mucus than blood. Many other reasons are given for the cause of death. If, perchance, a disease cannot be put into any of the bearer-defined registers, it is given the name of cachexy, which sounds very wise but means bad conditions of nourishment, decay. I now ask, what is really killing the poison? Modern medical science gives the bacilli as the cause for most of the diseases, thus showing that it also has the idea of a common fundamental factor for all diseases, the aging and death, and undoubtedly a large part of all diseases and their consequences, death, are due to the bacilli. My experimental proof that mucus is the fundamental and main factor differs from the bacillus theory, only in that just the mucus is the bed, the precondition, the primary. The excessive appearance of the white blood corpuscles, i.e. of the white dead mucus, as compared with the red sugar and iron substances, is becoming dangerous to life. Red-colored and sweet is the visible token of life and love. White, pale, colorless, bitter, the token of disease and overwhelming by mucus, the slow dying away of the individual. The death struggle or agony can only be regarded as a last crisis, a last effort of the organism to excrete mucus, a last fight of the still living cells against the dead ones and their death poisons. If the white dead cells, the mucus in the blood, gain the upper hand, there takes place not only a mechanical clogging up in the heart, but also a chemical reformation, a decline, a total poisoning, a sudden decay of the entire blood supply, and the machine stops short. It has pleased God Almighty. We bend our knees before the mysterious power of death. Thus we speak with resignation. Part 2, Chapter 6, Complete Instructions for Fasting. Most diseases are due to wrong eating habits, incorrect food combinations, acidulous foods, and the commercial foods of present-day civilization. How to overcome the results of these errors that the majority of us ignorantly inflict upon ourselves will be taught in the following pages. For thousands of years, fasting has been recognized as nature's supreme curative measure. But the art of when, why, and how to fast has been lost by those living in present-day civilization, with a very few exceptions. The body must have good, nourishing food, is the battle cry of today. But just what is good, nourishing food? The unfortunate sufferers go the rounds of the various schools of therapeutics, some of them deliberate fakirs, others unknowingly ignorant, but in the majority of cases groping darkly and in vain for the truth. And the unfortunate part of it all is that they die before they learn the truth. Religious evangelists and divine healers have the advantage of giving nature a chance. Prescription specialists, scientific surgery, serum injectors, and vaccine inoculators are the real offenders of an outraged nature. And so it resolves itself into a case of blind leading the blind. How simple it is to receive instructions from nature. Watch the animals heal themselves in time of illness without the use of so-called scientific medicine. This, then, is the supreme secret of Mother Nature self-healing. In these chapters, we intend showing why it is necessary to use cooked foods as well as natural foods to properly balance your diet. We will also explain the causes of fermentation and gas-producing foods. Chapter 7. Rational Fasting for Physical, Mental, and Spiritual Rejuvenation. It is significant for our time of degeneration that fasting, by which I mean living without solid and liquid food, is still a problem as a leading factor for the average man as well as for the orthodox medical doctor. Even naturopathy required a few decades in its development to take up nature's only universal and omnipotent remedy of healing. It is further significant that fasting is still considered as a special kind of cure, and due to some truly marvelous results here and there, it has quite recently become a worldwide fad. Some expert nature cure advocators plan out general prescriptions of fasting and how to break a fast regardless of your condition or the cause from which you are a sufferer. On the other hand, fasting is so feared and misrepresented that the average man actually considers you a fool if you miss a few meals when sick, thinking you will starve to death when in reality you are being cured. He fails to understand the difference between fasting and starvation. The medical doctor in general endorses and in fact teaches such foolish beliefs regarding nature's only foundational law of all healing and curing. Whatever has been designed and formulated to eliminate the disease matters and designated as natural treatments without having at least some restriction or change in diet or fasting is a fundamental disregard of the truth concerning the cause of disease. Have you ever thought what the lack of appetite means when sick? And that animals have no doctors and no drugstores and no sanitariums and no machinery to heal them. Nature demonstrates and teaches by that example that there is only one disease, and that one is caused through eating, and therefore every disease, whatsoever it may be named by man, is and can be healed by one remedy only, by doing the direct opposite of the cause, by the compensation of the wrong, i.e. reducing the quantity of food or fasting. The reason so many, and especially long fasting, cures have failed and continue to fail is due to the ignorance which still exists regarding what is going on in the body during a fast, an ignorance still existing even in the minds of naturopaths and fasting experts up to the present date. I dare say there may not be another man in history who has studied, investigated, tested, and experimented on fasting as much as I did. There is no other expert at present, as far as I know, who conducted so many fasting cures on the most severe cases as I did. I opened the first special sanitarium in the world for fasting, combined with the mucusless diet, and fasting is an essential part of my mucusless diet healing system. I have likewise made 4 public scientific tests of fastings of 21, 24, 32, and 49 days respectively as a scientific demonstration. The latter test is the world's record of a fast conducted under a strict scientific supervision of government officials. You may therefore believe me when I teach something new and instructive about what actually happens in the body during a fast. You have learned that the body must be first considered as a machine, a mechanism made of rubber-like material which has been overexpanded during its entire life through overeating. Therefore, the functioning of the organism is continually obstructed by an unnatural overpressure of the blood and on the tissues. As soon as you stop eating, this overpressure is rapidly relieved. The avenues of the circulation contract. The blood becomes more concentrated, and the superfluous water is eliminated. This goes on for the first few days, and you may even feel fine. but then the obstructions of the circulation become greater because the diameter of the avenues becomes smaller, and the blood must circulate through many parts of the body, especially in the tissues, at and around the symptom, against sticky mucus pressed out and dissolved from the inside walls. In other words, the bloodstream must overcome, dissolve, and carry with itself mucus and poisons for elimination through the kidneys. When you fast, you eliminate first and at once the primary obstructions of wrong and too much eating. This results in your feeling relatively good, or possibly even better than when eating. But as previously explained, you bring new secondary obstructions from your own waste in the circulation, and you feel miserable. You and everyone else blames the lack of food. The next day you can notice with certainty mucus in the urine, and when the quantity of waste taken in the circulation is eliminated, you will undoubtedly feel fine, even stronger than ever before. So it is a well-known fact that a faster can feel better and is actually stronger on the 20th day than on the 5th or 6th day. Certainly a tremendous proof that vitality does not depend primarily on food, but rather from an unobstructed circulation. Lesson 5 of my Mucusless Diet Healing System. The smaller amount of the O, obstruction, the greater P, air pressure, and therefore V, vitality. Through the above enlightening explanation, you see that fasting is, first, a negative proposition to relieve the body from direct obstructions of solid, most unnatural foods. Second, that it is a mechanical process of elimination by contracting tissues pressing out mucus, causing friction and obstruction in the circulation. The following are examples of vitality from P, power, air pressure alone. One of my first fasters, a relatively healthy vegetarian, walked 45 miles in the mountains on his 24th fast day. A friend, 15 years younger than myself, walked 56 hours continually after a 10-day fast. A German physician, a specialist in fasting cures, published a pamphlet entitled, Fasting, the Increase of Vitality. He learned the same fact that I did, but he does not know why and how, and vitality, therefore, remain mysterious for him. If you drink only water during a fast, the human mechanism cleanses itself, the same as though you would press out a dirty, watery sponge. But the dirt in this instance is sticky mucus, and in many cases pus and drugs, which must pass through the circulation until it is so thoroughly dissolved that it can pass through the fine structure of the physiological sieve called kidneys. Chapter 8. Building a Perfect Body Through Fasting. As long as the waste is in the circulation, you feel miserable during a fast. As soon as it is through the kidneys, you feel fine. 2 or 3 days later, and the same process repeats itself. It must now be clear to you why conditions change so often during a fast. It must now be clear to you why it is possible for you to feel unusually better and stronger on the 20th day than on the 5th, for instance. But this entire cleansing work through continued contracting of the tissue, becoming lean, must be done by and with the original old blood composition of the patient, and consequently a long fast, especially a too long fast, may become in fact a crime if the sick organism is too greatly clogged up by waste. Fasters who died from too long a fast did not die from lack of food, but actually suffocated in and with their own waste. I made this statement years ago. More clearly expressed, the immediate cause of death is not a poverty of blood in vital substances, but from too much obstruction, O. Obstruction becomes as great or even greater than P, air pressure, and the body mechanism is at its death point. I gave all of my fasters lemonade with a trace of honey or brown sugar for loosening and thinning the mucus in the circulation. Lemon juice and fruit acids of all kinds neutralize the stickiness of the mucus and pus. Acid paste cannot be used. If the patient has ever taken drugs over his entire life period, which are stored up in the body like the waste from food, his condition might easily become serious or even dangerous when those poisons enter the circulation when he takes his first fast. Palpitation of the heart, headaches, nervousness may set in, and especially insomnia. I saw patients eliminate drugs they had taken as long as 40 years before. Symptoms such as described above are blamed on the fast by everybody, and especially doctors. How long should one fast? Nature answers this question in the animal kingdom with a certain cruelty. Fast until you are either healed or dead. In my estimation, 50 to 60% of the so-called healthy men of today and 80 to 90% of the seriously chronic sick would die from their latent diseases through a long fast. How long one should fast cannot be definitely stated at all in advance, even in cases where the condition of the patient is known. When and how to break the fast is determined by noting carefully how conditions change during the fast. You now understand that the fast should be broken as soon as you notice that the obstructions are becoming too great in the circulation, and the blood needs new vital substance to resist and neutralize the poisons. Change your ideas regarding the claim, the longer you fast, the better the cure. You may now readily understand why. Man is the sickest animal on earth. No other animal has violated the laws of eating as much as man. No other animal eats as wrongly as man. Here is the point where human intelligence can correctively assist in the self-healing process by following adjustments which embrace the mucusless diet healing system. First, prepare for an easier fast by a gradually changing diet toward a mucusless diet, arid, natural, herbal, laxatives, and enemas. Second, change shorter fast periodically with some eating days of cleansing mucus-poor and mucusless diet. Third, be particularly careful if the patient used much drugs, especially if a mercury or salpetra, oxide of silver, taken for venereal diseases, have been used, in which case a long, slowly changing, preparative diet is advisable. An expert suggestion to fast until the tongue is clean caused many troubles with fanatical fasters, and I personally know of one death. You may be surprised when I tell you that I had to cure patients from the ill effects of too long a fast. The reason will be clear later. In spite of the above, every cure, and especially every cure of diet, should start with a 2 or 3 day fast. Every patient can do this without any harm, regardless of how seriously sick he may be. First a laxative and then an enema daily makes it easier as well as harmless. How to break a fast. I consider the knowledge of how to break a fast of the utmost importance. The right food after a fast itself. At the same time, it depends entirely upon the condition of the patient, and very much upon the length of the fast. You may learn from the results of the two extreme cases, both of which ended fatally, not from the fast, but from the first wrong meal, just why this knowledge is so important. A one-sided meat eater suffering from diabetes broke his fast, which lasted about a week, by eating dates and died from the effects. A man of over 60 years of age fasted 28 days, too long. His first meal of vegetarian foods consisted mainly of boiled potatoes. A necessary operation showed that the potatoes were kept in the contracted intestines by thick, sticky mucus, so strong that a piece had to be cut off, and the patient died shortly after the operation. In the first case, the terrible poisons loosened in the stomach of this one-sided meat eater during his fast, when mixed with the concentrated fruit sugar of the dates, caused at once so great a fermentation with carbonic acid gases and other poisons that the patient could not stand the shock. The correct advice would be, first, a laxative, such as a preparation consisting of harmless herbs, later raw and cooked starchless vegetables, a piece of rough bran bread toast. Sauerkraut is to be recommended in such cases. No fruit should be eaten for a long time after the fast has been broken. The patient should have been prepared for the fast by a longer transition diet. In the second case, the patient fasted entirely too long for a man of his age without proper preparation. Through these two very instructive examples, you may see how individually different the advice must be, and how strong it is to make up general suggestions concerning how to break a fast. Chapter 9, Important Rules for the Faster, to be carefully studied and memorized. What can be said in general, and what I teach, is new and different from the average fasting experts, and it is as follows. 1. The first meal and the menus for a few days after a fast must be of a laxative effect and not of nourishing value, as mostly all others think. 2. The sooner the first meal passes through the body, the more efficiently it carries out the loosened mucus and poisons of the intestines and the stomach. 3. If no good stool is experienced after 2 or 3 hours, help with laxatives and enemas. Whenever I fasted, I always experienced a good bowel movement at least 1 hour after eating, and at once felt fine. After breaking a long fast, I spent more time on the toilet than in bed the following night, and that was as it should be. While sojourning in Italy many years ago, I drank about 2 quarts of fresh grape juice after a fast. At once, I experienced a watery diarrhea set in foaming mucus. Almost immediately after, I experienced a feeling of such unusual strength that I easily performed the knee-bending and arm-stretching exercise 326 times. This removal so thoroughly of obstructions, taking place after a fast of a few days, increased pee, vitality at once. You will have to experience a similar sensation to believe me, and then you will agree with my formula. Vitality equals power minus obstructions, and you will realize the absurdity of making up scientific nourishing menus for health and efficiency. 4. The longer the fast, the more efficiently the bowels perform after it is over. 5. The best laxative foods after a fast are fresh, sweet fruits. Best of all are cherries and grapes, then a little soaked or stewed prunes. These fruits must not be used after a meat eater's first fast, but only for people who have lived for a certain time on mucusless or at least mucus-poor foods, the transition diet. 6. In the average case, it is advisable to break the fast with raw and cooked starchless vegetables. Stewed spinach has an especially good effect. 7. If the first meal does not cause any unpleasantness, you may eat as much as you can. Eating only a small quantity of food for the first 2 or 3 days without experiencing a bowel movement, owing to the small amount of food taken, another wrong advice given by experts, is dangerous. 8. If you are in the proper condition so that you can start eating with fruits and you have no bowel movement after about an hour, then eat more or eat a vegetable meal as suggested above. Eat until you bring out the waste accumulated during the fast with your stool after eating the first meal. Chapter 10, Rules During the Fast. 1. Clean the lower intestines as well as you can with enemas at least every other day. 2. Before starting a longer fast, take a laxative occasionally, and by all means the day before you start the fast. 3. If possible, remain in the fresh air day and night. 4. Take a walk, exercise, or some other physical work only when you feel strong enough to do it. If tired and weak, rest and sleep as much as you can. 5. On days when you feel weak, and you will experience such days when the waste is in the circulation, you will find that your sleep is restless and disturbed, and you may experience bad dreams. This is caused through the poisons passing through the brain. Doubt, loss of faith will arise in your mind. Then take this lesson and read it over and over, as well as the other fasting chapters, and especially Lesson 5 of my Mucusless Diet Healing System book. Don't forget that you are, parenthetically speaking, lying on nature's operating table, the most wonderful of all operations that could be performed, and without the use of a knife. If any extraordinary sensation occurs due to the drugs that are now in circulation, take an enema at once, lie down, and if necessary, break the fast, but not with fruits. 6. Whenever you arise after lying down, do it slowly, otherwise you may become dizzy. The latter condition is not serious, but you had better avoid it in this manner. It caused me a considerable fear in the beginning, and I know a number of fasters and strict eaters who gave up when they experienced this sensation, lost their faith forever. Fasting drinks. The fanatic fasting enthusiast drinks only water. He thinks it best to avoid any trace of food whatever. I consider a light lemonade with a little honey or brown sugar or a little fruit juice the best. Drink as often as you care to during the day, but in general, not more than 2 to 3 quarts a day. The less you drink, the more aggressive the fast works. As a change, vegetable juice made from cooked, starchless vegetables is very good during a longer fast. Raw tomato juice, etc., is also good. But if fruit juice, for example, orange juice, is used during a longer fast, be extremely careful because the fruit juices may cause the poisons to become loosened too rapidly without causing a bowel movement. I know a number of such fruit and fruit juice fast which fail completely because all mucus and all poisons loosen too fast and too much at one time, disturbs all organs too greatly when in the circulation, and have to be eliminated only through the circulation without the aid of bowel movements. Morning fast or non-breakfast plan. The worst of all eating habits nowadays is to stuff the stomach with food early in the morning. In European countries, excepting England, no one takes a regular meal for breakfast. It is generally a drink of some kind, with bread only. The only time that man does not eat for 10 to 12 hours is while he is asleep during the night. As soon as his stomach is free from food, the body starts the eliminating process of a fast. Therefore, encumbered people feel miserable and have a coated tongue upon awakening in the morning. They have no appetite at all, yet they crave food, eat it, and feel better. Why? Another mystery revealed. This is one of the greatest problems I solved, and is one that has puzzled all experts who believe it is the food itself. As soon as you refill the stomach with food, the elimination is stopped, and you feel better. I must say that this secret which I discovered is undoubtedly the explanation of why eating became a habit and is no longer what nature intended it should be, i.e., a satisfaction, a compensation of nature's need of food. This habit of eating, striking all civilized mankind and now physiologically explained, involves and proves the saying I coined long ago, life is a tragedy of nutrition. The more waste that man accumulates, the more he must eat to stop the elimination. I had patients who had to eat several times during the night to be able to sleep again. In other words, they had to put food in the stomach to avoid the digestion of mucus and poisons accumulated there. Chapter 11. Short Fast and the Non-Breakfast Plan. During my experience with thousands of fasters, I had patients that had to eat several times during the night in order to sleep again. The reason is very apparent. Let me cite an example. Upon awakening, you perhaps feel fine, but instead of getting up, you remain in bed and fall asleep again, have a bad dream, and actually feel miserable upon awakening the second time. You can understand the exact reason for this. As soon as you get up, walk around, or do something, the body is in an entirely different condition than during the sleep. The elimination is slowed down, the energy being used elsewhere. If eating breakfast is eliminated from your daily menus, you will probably experience some harmless sensations such as headaches for the first 1 or 2 days, but after that you will feel much better, work better, and enjoy your luncheon better than ever. Hundreds of severe cases have been cured by the non-breakfast fast alone without important changes in diet, proving that the habit of a full breakfast meal is the worst of all and most injurious. It is advisable and of great advantage to allow the patient to have the same drink for breakfast that he is accustomed to. If he craves coffee, let him continue his drink of coffee, but absolutely no solid food. Later on, replace the coffee with a warm vegetable juice, and still later change to lemonade. This change should be made gradually for the average mixed eater. The 24-hour fast or one meal a day plan. As with the breakfast fast, you can heal more severe cases with the 24-hour fast, for in cases of deep chronic encumbrance and drugs, it is a careful, preliminary step to the necessary longer fasts. The best time to eat is in the afternoon, say 3 or 4 o'clock p.m. If the patient is on the mucusless or transition diet, let him eat the fruits first. Fruits should always be eaten first, and after an elapse of 15 or 20 minutes, eat the vegetables, but all should be eaten within an hour, so that it is to say one meal. Chapter 12, Fasting When Used in Connection with the Mucusless Diet Healing System. As I have stated before, I am no longer in favor of long fasts. In fact, it may become criminal to let a patient fast for 30 or 40 days on water, contracting the avenues of circulation, which are continually filling up more and more with mucus and by dangerous old drugs and poisons, and at the same time rotten blood from his old stock, in fact, actually starving from necessary vital food elements. No one can stand a fast of that kind without disadvantage or without harming his vitality. If fasting is to be used at all, then start at first with the non-breakfast plan, then follow with the 24-hour fast for a while, then gradually increase up to 3, 4, or 5-day fasts, eating between fasts for 1, 2, 3, or 4 days, a mucusless diet, combined individually as an elimination adjustment, and at the same time supplying and rebuilding the body continually with and by the best elements contained in and found only in mucusless foods. Through such intermittent fasts, the blood is gradually improved, regenerated, can more easily tolerate the poisons and waste, and the patient is able at the same time to dissolve and eliminate disease deposits from the deepest tissues of the body, deposits that no doctor ever dreamed existed and that no other method of healing has ever discovered or can remove. This, then, is the mucusless diet healing system, with fasting an essential part of it. Fasting in cases of acute disease. Hunger Cures, Wonder Cures was the title for the first fasting book I ever read. It gave the experiences of a country doctor in which he said, "No feverish acute disease must or can end with death if nature's instinctive command to stop eating through lack of appetite is followed." It is insanity to give food to a pneumonia patient with a high fever, for instance. Having had an unusual contraction of the lung tissues by a cold, the pressed-out mucus goes into the circulation and produces an unusual heat fever. The human engine, already through heat, at the burning point, becomes more heated through partaking of solid food, broth, etc., good nourishing foods. Air baths taken in the room, enemas, laxative, cool lemonade would save the lives of thousands of young men who are now daily permitted to die, the innocent victims of pneumonia or other acute diseases. Chapter 13, Fasting for Spiritual Rebirth Through the Superior Fast. All experts except myself believe that you live from your own flesh during a fast. You know now that what they call metabolism, metabolize your own flesh when you fast, is simply the elimination of waste. The Indian fakir, the greatest fakir in the world today, is nothing but skin and bones. I learned that the cleaner you are, the easier it is to fast and the longer you can stand it. In other words, in a body free of all waste and poisons and when no solid foods are taken, the human body functions for the first time in its life without obstructions. The elasticity of the entire tissue system and of the internal organs, especially of the spongy lungs, work with an entirely different vibration and efficiency than ever before, by air alone, and without the slightest obstructions. Stated differently, V equals P, and if you simply supply the engine with the necessary water which is used up, you ascend into a higher state of physical, mental, and spiritual condition. I call that the superior fast. If your blood stock is formed from eating the foods I teach, your brain will function in a manner that will surprise you. Your former self will take on the appearance of a dream, and for the first time in your existence, your conscious awakens to a real self-consciousness. Your mind, your thinking, your ideals, your aspirations, and your philosophy change fundamentally in such a way as to beggar description. Your soul will shout for joy and triumph over all misery of life, leaving it all behind you. For the first time, you will feel a vibration of vitality through your body, like a slight electric current, that shakens you delightfully. You will learn and realize that fasting and superior fasting, and not volumes of psychology and philosophy, is the real and only key to a superior life, to the revelation of a superior world, and to the spiritual world. All of my experiments were made on my own person before being used on patients. My health experiments began while still holding a professorship in Baden-Baden, Germany, where I had become incurably ill. My complete restoration to health, to what was probably the most perfect state of health of anyone living in our Western civilization today, was an interesting adventure of finding the fundamental laws of nature during my pursuit of health. I found that the body normalizes itself if properly cleansed of toxic wastes and supplied with proper nutrition. Mucus is the keynote of the misunderstanding. I have consistently and definitely proven that a mucusless diet, coupled with the wise use of fasting and observing the basic laws of physiology, is the magic wand by which our present-day civilization will be afforded a new lease on life. I contend that all disease, regardless of its scientific name or the symptoms accompanying it, consists of constitutional encumbrance of waste material known as foreign matter. Nature continually attempts to eliminate this disease-producing waste encumbrance and to stop the source of it. My method of restoration performs exactly the same in the human body as instinctive self-healing does in the animal kingdom. The disease-producing material is partially digested, decaying, semi-liquid, generally known as mucus. Everyone living on today's accepted mixed diet consisting of starchy vegetables, grains, and meat is more or less clogged up with mucus, whether sick or not. Chapter 14, Conclusion. While I have conducted thousands of fasting cures, any number of people have been helped by simply changing their present dietary habits. The sudden change of diet causes disturbances even in an entirely healthy person. For this reason, a change made too rapidly may become dangerous, and a complete knowledge is therefore essential. To relieve and avoid any disturbance of health and at the same time to replace the old tidbit enjoyments by new and better ones can be accomplished if one follows my transition diet. Changing from meat-eating to a strictly vegetarian or fruitarian diet always results in a more vigorous feeling for the first few days. Then, weakness, great fatigue, possibly headaches, and palpitation of the heart set in. Fruit being the only natural food loosens and dissolves the mucus, poisons, and toxemias, and the pinned-up filth and morass of overfeeding is passed out through the circulating blood. The dead, decayed tissues are pushed aside to make room for the new living food substances, and for the time being, the patient loses the change of matter balance. The elimination of poison through the circulating blood causes more or less disturbance of health. And unless you are thoroughly convinced of the efficacy of the natural diet, Your friends will dissuade you from further attempts to cleanse the body and will urge an interruption of internal purification in order to save you from what they believe will result seriously, and you will soon become lean. The face will appear haggard and drawn, and a general description of feeling may overtake you. This, then, is the healing crisis, and if understandingly carried on, will result in unhoped-for good health. I divide all foods into two kinds. 1. Mucus-forming foods. 2. Non-mucus-forming foods. Under the first heading, we find meat, eggs, fats, milk, and all byproducts made therefrom, dried beans, dried peas, lentils, and all starchy foods. The second classification embraces all non-starchy green vegetables and all kinds of fruits. There are certain vegetables and fruits that contain more or less starch and should be given the place of secondary importance in the dietary. Begin the transition with as much mucusless foods as possible and as little mucus-forming foods as possible. I call this a mucus-less diet. The next step toward health is the mucus-less diet, which means a combination of starchless vegetables and fruits. With the help of this transition diet and some knowledge by the individual to choose and combine rightly, the greatest and most important truth of life is revealed to them. This miscalled strength, which we experience after meat eating, is nothing but stimulation, for there is no nourishment for man in meat. Hardening of the arteries, in which fatty, plaque-shaped particles are deposited on the blood vessel walls, they build up a choking lining. In time, they may calcify and harden. High blood pressure often results. This kind of hardening of the arteries is the chief villain in death and disability. Heart attacks, arthritis, and diseases of senility stem from this same cause. The meat-eating animals will die on cooked meats without blood and bones, and rats soon die on an exclusive diet of white flour. My mucus theory, now a proven fact, has been more and more recognized. It has withstood the test with enormous success, and today has a platform that natural treatment and diet is the most perfect and successful system of healing known. Nothing is easier than making promises merely by saying words, and nothing is more difficult than actually living up to these easily made promises day after day. What you promise today must be renewed and redecided tomorrow, for you and no one else but you must decide the want to live. Eret's health teachings, based on a natural diet over the years that lie ahead, must be followed. You will soon find life more desirable, and you will enter with joyous gusto into things you formerly feared. A whole new vista will be opened to you. Suffering humanity may now have the means of not only relieving but preventing disease through rational fasting and the mucusless diet, and developing an improved race of people that need never know what disease conditions are. And my most fervent hope is that it will bring about a better civilized humanity. May this book serve all readers seeking after truth, regardless of its source. May it especially serve the sick, and encouraging those worrying about the loss of their youth and the first sign of old age. And may this book find an increasingly larger audience who will accept and follow the truths it teaches. For fasting is not a fad, but a definite cure, which must eventually establish itself in a permanent first place to the benefit of all mankind. Section 2, Chapter 15, Health and Happiness Through Fasting, When, Why, Where, and How to Fast. Fasting requires much more knowledge than the average health seeker considers necessary. Hopefully, this article will help convince you that through fasting lies the road to health and happiness. Few individuals pay much attention to the underlying causes of human illness or the vital problems of what food is best for human consumption, and as a result, we innocently contribute to our own miseries and ailments through overindulgence in eating incompatible food combinations, i.e. meat, alcoholic stimulants, dairy products and starchy foods. Excessive worry, tension, and overwork are all contributing factors. Fasting must first be recognized as nature's way of healing all ills, and while not a cure-all for every known ailment, total fasting makes it possible for nature, in her desperate and continuous effort, to remove and expel the foreign matter and disease-producing toxemic wastes from the body, thereby correcting the faults of wrong living and improper diet. Fasting may not be adapted to everyone under every condition, but fortunately, fasting can prove acceptable to the greater majority. Nature alone possesses the true healing power, and our body can therefore be designated a self-curative organism. For centuries past, we have been taught to look upon illness, disease, as some deliberate affliction visited upon us, whether deserved or not, whereas in truth it is actually nature's house-cleaning effort. When this truism finally becomes recognized and nature, the great healer, is permitted to carry on, you will note a vast improvement in your health. Suppressing ailments and symptoms of pain through use of sedative and pain-relieving drugs must eventually result in the illness becoming chronic. During the course of a lifetime, toxemic waste are continually being discharged, and it is claimed that the body and all vital organs have been renewed many times. Correcting wrong dietetic habits will permit the body to take advantage of this natural phenomenon and build clean, healthy tissue. Only through a total fast can this be satisfactorily brought about. Voluntary abstinence from food for restoring normal bodily vigor was instinctive with primitive man. Start fasting 1 or 2 days, drinking water only, to which a few drops of lemon or lime juice has been added, especially if distilled water is used. At about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, break the fast with a light laxative or enema. You will be shocked at the amount of waste that is now being thrown off almost immediately. This mass of previous uneliminated waste was poisoning your bloodstream circulation continuously. This should help convince you that here is the way, and the only way, to health. It is the height of folly to expect modern miracle drugs to do more than to temporarily suppress the aches and pains of disease. Because of the sedative ability of the narcotic drug to deaden the inflamed nerves and tissues for a few hours at most, nature's warning signals are thereby ruthlessly disregarded. Arnold Arendt truthfully claims that the basic cause of all latent disease of man, whatever its official name may be, is a clogged-up tissue system of uneliminated, unused, and undigested food substances. Disease is still a mystery to every doctor who fails or deliberately refuses to understand and recognize these simple facts. Disease consists of a foreign matter which has weight, and which must be eliminated from the body before the patient can hope to get well. Every sick person must, therefore, go through the healing process of a cleansing so that the body may have the opportunity of eliminating the sticky mucus, which has been stored in the tissues or held in the pockets of the intestines for years, and which interferes with the proper digestive and blood-building functions. Unfortunately, fasting is so feared by the average individual that he actually believes starvation will result through missing a few meals, when in reality he is being helped, and many practitioners fail to grasp or fully understand that there is a vast difference existing between fasting and starvation. A sure proof of the efficacy of fasting is to discontinue all food intake, with the exception of water, for a day or two. Note how the tongue, being an organ of elimination, becomes thickly coated with mucus. The odor of decaying foods is on your breath, and the bowel eliminations become offensive. Probably for the first time, the body now has been given an opportunity of eliminating the overabundance of stored-up wastes and encumbrances, clogging up the tissues. Having assured yourself of the desirability of ridding your body of unwanted waste and encumbrances, the remedy consists of a series of short fasts. each fast to be followed by a cleansing diet of fruits and green leaf vegetables, eaten either in their natural or cooked state. This cleansing program must be continued just so long as complete recovery to normal health is absent. How long should one fast? Every person has an individual problem. Age of patient, nature of the illness, amount and type of drugs previously used. In fact, so many considerations need to be given full recognition of this subject that the list would be endless. Fasting is nature's oldest, yet least expensive, and in our opinion, best method of treatment.